Welcome to Caribbean Millennials. Welcome to episode 11 of the Caribbean Millennials podcast.
Episode 11, yeah boy, we here.
How's everyone doing this week?
Yeah, I hope everyone had a good week, you know.
Some Adani, people recovering from the bacchanal?
Yeah, people like Adani.
I'm recovering. lots of bruises. Yeah, lots of bruises. Yeah, it was.
You were fighting on the road, man.
Hard wine.
Okay. Yeah.
Shout out to any Grenadians listening, as y'all are probably listening. If there are some of y'all who have a hardcore tabanka and not jumping spice mass, that will be on Monday when this episode drops.
Yeah, well, I mean, outside of those who are not jumping, you know, big up to the ones who are. I hope you enjoy it, you know. Stay safe out there, you know, and whatnot. Yeah. So, what are we talking about this episode, Nisi? You know, when our 11th episode, we've talked about a lot, you know. What are we talking about now?
So, this week, we're going to talk about, you know, I wanted to make some money. I have something for sale there. How much you want a Lucian passport for?
Oh boy, you're selling passports now? You're selling citizenship? That's a bold statement there, you know.
Well, I mean, if so many islands can do it, right?
Boy, that's a hot thing. So
this week we're going to talk about what we consider a hot topic, citizenship by investment. So, for those of y'all that don't know, citizenship by investment programs are more or less programs that certain Caribbean governments have adopted, where they more or less sell citizenship to foreigners as a means to get investment for the country.
Well, to bring revenue into the country, and you know,
The whole citizenship by investment programs have been somewhat controversial in terms of it's more or less become a race where the different countries with the citizenship by investment programs are, you know, they essentially like battling to be the lowest bidder, like who can
I hear you, go ahead.
Who can offer the passports for the cheapest to, you know, drive the most foreign investments and that kind of thing. So the five countries that I identified that offer citizenship by investment programs in the Caribbean are Saint Kitts and Nevis, Antigua and Barbuda, Dominica, Grenada, and Saint Lucia.
Okay.
What do y'all, I mean, before we kind of dive into CIP, what's your guys' initial take on it?
Well, go ahead, Danny.
Personally, I don't think it's a terrible thing. I just don't think the implementation is where it should be.
Yep.
And thus making it right now in its current form horrible.
Yeah, that's where I stand. I think the implementation is horrible, but not only that, even as it's implemented, we have no idea of when the money comes in. We don't know where the money goes. All we know is money came in. We don't know what it's put towards, what it's spent on. We have no way of tracking it and seeing it. And furthermore, the rules are very outside of you going to a lawyer to find out. No one is explaining the rules to the citizens, the laymen. So, as you will see as we talk, the rules are, you would be surprised the requirements for you to do it. You'd be surprised how simple they are.
Yeah, so I think another kind of controversial part about this whole CIP thing is not only the value that they charge for the CIP programs, but also that they kind of set in a lot of these governments just to kind of encourage people to do these citizenship by investment programs. They're setting the bar extremely low in terms of residency requirements and background and and that kind of thing.
And doing that, allowing all kind of riffraff to come in.
Right.
And
so
criminals basically using this thing as a safe haven for themselves.
More or less, it's, you know, extremely open for people like criminals, money launderers, these kinds of people to just...
And weirdos. I have a story.
Okay.
About a couple who bought passports from Dominica, became citizens, went for the as the Dominican Winter Olympic team. One didn't finish the race and one did not start the race.
Wow.
But there are two people who had never been to Dominica representing Dominica at the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi.
Wow.
But I don't think that's that bad.
That is a lighter case. That's a fair case. That one is not bad.
That's just weirdos.
But that's the weirdo one, nonetheless.
Yeah.
That's a weirdo.
Yeah.
I mean, you call them weirdo. I call them opportunists.
No, that's weirdos because check it, Dominica. No snow. Like, and you're representing Dominica.
Yeah, but the people just wanted to be there.
All right. But you haven't started the race and you don't even finish the race. Like,
come on. They just wanted to say they were an Olympian. I feel like from the moment they make it to the game.
Okay, so Heather, that's a case of weirdos. But let me give you another case of criminal. Just straight up criminal. So apparently, in Antigua, this Indian billionaire, well, basically, he's wanted for alleged participation in a multi-million dollar fraud scheme by Indian authorities. So he bought his Antiguan, he did the whole citizenship by investment thing, got his Antiguan passport, and now he's over there living in Antigua. So now the Indians want them to send him back. Apparently he did, how much was it? They're saying something, almost $2 billion in fraud. So... That's what we're doing.
You had said earlier that the Indians were trying to
warn them. The funny thing is, the Indians had warned them. They sent out a message to them telling them, hey, this guy is wanted for some criminal activity. So, you know, we get it. You give him the passport already, but I think you'll need to revoke this and kick this man out of the country already. But nothing has been done yet. So, that's a case of... I would say not enough due diligence, background being done.
Yeah, but I also think it's an example of what happens in so many of these small Caribbean islands is that money talks, right?
Yeah.
So let me dive into kind of what I found out on a country by country basis. But I guess let me give you all a broad kind of landscape first. A lot of these programs, they have very low requirements. They, some of them don't even require certain business or managerial or
educational requirements
or anything like that. Some of them don't require that you do an interview. Some of them don't require that
you live in
the island for a certain amount of time. Some of them even don't require that you can speak English. exactly. And I think the ranges really for the investment are, I think the lowest one we saw was about $100,000.
Before you go into the ranges, who has the oldest CIP program?
St. Kitts has the oldest CIP program, and they have the oldest CIP program in the world. It was established in 1984. So St. Kitts and Nevis was talking about citizenship by investment before anybody else. They offer citizenship to applicants over the age of 18 of sound health and good moral character. And that's the verbiage that you'll see in all of the CIP things. Because I think a lot of the other islands probably modeled their thing after St. Kitts. But applicants over a certain age of good health and good moral character.
Here's my question. If you don't require an interview, how are you knowing I'm of sound health and good moral character?
Well, the health you can submit your medicals, but the good moral character.
Even for the health,
No, but
I can find a doctor.
You just send in a.
Yeah.
You just send in a form and you just say, I am of sound moral character. Form, and then
you know, you get a lawyer to notarize that for you. And
Or you send in a YouTube video.
Yeah.
You send in a YouTube video. Hi.
Oh, you
my name is Bob. I am of sound moral character. And sound health.
Trust me when I tell you I am of sound health and good moral character.
Yeah.
Would I lie to you? Does this face look like a
face of somebody who lied to you? Like really?
Yeah. So a lot of the programs they're structured in these ways where there may be one or two options where you just straight up give an investment. And then they will process your application. The range of time they process your application would be as low as little as 3 months to as long as 6 months. So it's a very rapid.
So that's a rapid fire thing. So you tell me right now that I can invest in Antigua, and in 3 months' time, I'm at Antigua.
Yeah, you could. Now I wonder how it works for. Well, people from the OECS and CARICOM probably wouldn't be doing that in the first place, right? But
yeah, but I mean, if I wasn't, like, so I put in my application, you know, January there, by March, April, I talk to people like, hey, you know, I'm going back home to Antigua.
But it's structured where you could either give an investment, and they may have one or two kind of tiers of given investments. And the third way they encourage people to invest is by real estate. But the tricky thing with the whole real estate situation is it's land that's pre-approved by the government, which is interesting. It would be interesting to know what lands the government has actually identified. And there's only a minimum requirement in a lot of these countries either to hold the land for 3 years or for 5 years. So it's not that they're making an investment in real estate and they have to develop it or it's towards a certain real estate project. They can literally just buy a piece of land,
hold that for 3 years and turn around and sell that.
But I don't know.
So really and truly that's an investment for the person because you know land appreciates. So you buy a piece of land, let's say you pay $200,000 for that. 3 years, you turn around and you sell that at a profit. You make some money there.
The other thing you're finding is that, for the funds, the funds may say, oh, well, the funds could be used for all of these kinds of things, like infrastructure, health, whatever. But it's like listing all of the items in, like, that would be in, like, a budget
for a country.
Versus... saying like...
like a targeting some specific thing and the money going there.
Mm-hmm. But let me go through some details. So for St. Kitts, you could either make an investment of $150,000 or $170,000. And these figures I took for just a single person, right?
Okay.
It goes up if you're a family or whatnot. But the lowest and quickest is to make the investment of $150,000 or $175,000. And then for real estate, it needs to be a partnership where if it's you and one other person, you have to put in $200,000 each for a single piece of real estate to be held for 5 years, and the investment is exempt from duty.
Okay.
In Antigua's program, there's a low residency, no interview required. No minimum level of English required. No previous education or management experience required. So, like, that just sounds like you can just come up
so off the grid like you're
like
Mexican.
Like I was born yesterday.
I need citizenship.
Now listen to this.
Dory and I cannot speak English.
Listen to this one. Main applicants alone, but not their families, must spend a minimum of 5 days on Antigua and Barbuda over a period of 5 years.
So you have 5 years to spend 5 days?
Yes. Basically. So and you can just
so one day a year?
One day a year. Overnight. Just an overnight flight. Just stop.
All 5 days may be spent on the island at the end of the 5 year period.
So instead of coming one day a year, just wait for the last year and come for 5 days. So go for the last week of the year. Just come for Christmas.
Five days, not even like a... Like, that's a working week.
Yeah.
You come on Monday, leave on Friday, yes, and you're good.
Now, Antigua was also interested in that. They had the same setup. So they make a one-time contribution to the National Development Fund. And all of them have these, like, funny names, like National Development Fund, National Transformation Fund, right? And the contribution there is $100,000. So that's the lowest you'll see, right? $100,000. But here's where Antigua gives you the kicker compared to the other islands. Sometimes the other islands was like a $7,500 processing fee. Antigua is $25,000 processing fee.
Okay.
For real estate, they require, similar to St. Kitts, the $400,000 for real estate investment, but a $50,000 processing fee. Or the other option for Antigua is investing in a government-approved business. But the question then is, how do you become a government? Who is a government-approved business?
Yeah, but okay, you see, in that case, yes, that's a question. But that doesn't really bother me that much, because nonetheless, it's going into the economy.
So for us to invest in a government-approved business, if it's a single applicant, it's $1.5 million. If it's joint investors, it needs to be a total investment of $5 million.
Wow.
But for some people,
wild.
For some people, that's nothing. Dominica, you have no requirement to reside in Dominica before, during, or after the application.
So I don't never have to touch Dominican soil for me to become a Dominican. Okay, go on.
And then
that's how the couple from Suji, you know. Just go online, become a Dominican.com, fill it out, and then next thing you know, you're representing Dominica in the Winter Olympics.
Make sure you print out 2 copies of your receipt from the website.
Oh, yeah. There was a stringent requirement. They had to know how to spell their name properly.
Wow.
Just for visa application.
So with Dominica, the minimum thing is $100,000. Again, the real estate investment is $200,000. For Grenada, it's the same thing. No requirement to reside in Grenada before, during, or after application. It's $150,000 that will get you in at a minimum investment. And then for the real estate thing, it's $350,000, and the land only needs to be held for 3 years. Now, St. Lucia, gotta love our country. No residency or travel requirements, except...
Wait for it.
...that the oath of allegiance must be taken in St. Lucia or before any St. Lucian embassy, high commission, or consulate.
So, hey, Dr. Danny, you know what? You're not from St. Lucia. Let's say you're German. You try and become St. Lucian. You do your citizenship by investment. But you look at the price of a ticket to St. Lucia and you say, that's a bit too hot. But
if you have $100,000, it'd be a ticket, not too hot.
Okay. Hear that. It's only too hot. You don't have time to go to St. Lucia, but you happen to have a business trip planned to New York. So what you do is, while you're in New York,
you pop over
to the St. Lucian embassy in New York. You say the oath of allegiance. First of all, I go to be honest, Missy.
What is the
29 years. I on earth, I am a St. Lucian. I never knew we had an oath of allegiance. You know the oath of allegiance?
Oh, you all don't know the oath of allegiance?
Hey, boy. Educators, you must be a criminal if you know it.
He's even close to the prison. So.
You buy your citizenship. That's what happened.
Well, I know there's a national pledge. I don't know what this
oath of allegiance is. Yeah, I know the pledge. Oath of allegiance.
But the oath of allegiance probably have something like I am
a moral character. Or maybe the oath of allegiance is a national pledge. Maybe that's what it is. Because I just looked it up there.
Maybe.
And I typed oath of allegiance and it came.
Well, the national pledge?
The national pledge came up.
Okay.
So maybe that's what it is. But even if, me say, that's a couple lines.
That's what you're requiring.
That much lines. Anyway.
But same thing, St. Lucia has a fund that's $100,000. And the real estate investment is $300,000. There's also an enterprise option where investments in pre-approved enterprise projects, and this is the only one we've seen say that, must create no less than 3 permanent jobs. Joint investments are allowed, although each applicant must contribute at least 1 million and the entire project must be valued at 6 million and create at least 6 permanent jobs.
So hear that, sir. I can
Go ahead. And then the final option for sale. Well, okay, on that, go, yeah, say what you say.
Because, okay, 3 permanent jobs. So I can what, basically. What's permanent? What's the job? Like, do I, what's the what's job? What's
the level of the job?
Yeah.
Because so can I hire free janitors?
No, you say free janitors. I just hire free people to come on different days of the week to water a plant, one plant. That's a permanent job. I hire you until I fire you. That's permanent, eh?
But the other thing, the question there is, what are the pre-approved enterprise projects? That's the other story. Exactly. Right? Where's the pre-approved land? Where's the, what are the pre-approved enterprise projects?
Who's
right?
pre-approving these lands?
Right.
And these things.
And then.
And what makes a land pre-approvable?
Yeah, true. No? Because, okay, a piece of land may not be approvable now. Or I may have a piece of land and I may think, you know what, let me try and get that pre-approved for. In, and then I originally tell me, oh no, move the piece of land. Mm-hmm. That's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then Anushka comes with her piece of land that are right next to mine and they let her in.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know what's the requirements there.
So
land must be 1 foot by 1 foot at least. And but must be accessible must by be foot.
Accessible by foot and by car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Oh my god. Yes, that is probably the requirements.
So, yeah. So
doing this government.
Oh, here's the kicker. The last one on the St. Lucia.
Oh, on St. Lucia. Yeah, Danny, get ready for that one. The last
investment option is an investment, I think it's $500,000, an investment in a non-interest bearing government bond. Non-interest bearing.
Yeah. So you are making nothing. So basically, you're giving them $500,000 and you come back and you're taking your $500,000 later. That's what I hear in there.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Right?
I mean, that's how we know bonds.
For the most, right? For the most, it's just have a time period and they tell you can come back after a couple of years.
And yeah, so in which case, if it's non-interest bearing, then the government would be the ones making the interest off of that $500,000.
Yeah, but like, to the person, that's the same as just putting it in the bank. Yeah. The bank already paying no interest.
Yeah.
So if they have $500,000 to spare, just let the government hold that for a couple of years. I will collect that later. Check it.
So now that I've given you all an overview of these different programs, the requirements or lack thereof, the investment options or shams thereof.
That's not issue with this thing.
I
don't mean
to be so harsh, but you know, I think if we talk about the reality of the situation, okay, yes, we need investments. Yes, there are other countries in the world that do similar things. Like, I mean, here in the US, there's an investors visa. But I think you have to invest $250,000 US dollars and prove that you
creating 10
like 10 jobs or something like that. You know, even it has to be in certain areas, certain fields. And I think for just the desire of wanting the money, it doesn't seem like that much thought and care was put into the development of these programs. I mean, I feel like I don't want to completely bash them because because I know St. Kitts has had some success with, you know, their program.
I think they may have started having the most success, but when other people came into the game and started dropping the price, it probably became not a very profitable thing for them.
Because
if you keep having to drop the price, then eventually it's like you're giving away the passport. Like, and don't get me wrong, I get you want to. Maybe you're going for the idea of you making your money off of volume versus, you know, but at some point it just becomes a lose-lose because now you're giving everybody your passport. People out there running around claiming they Antiguan or they Dominican. They're not all, sometimes they're hurting your country name and you're getting a couple of peanuts that cannot do anything for your country. Or not doing that much for your country.
And I think that's kind of, you know, when you think about things like this, you also think about, as you say, how this quest for investment hurts the true citizens themselves, right? Yeah. Because if you have all of these criminals and questionable people potentially coming in, or even if you don't have the questionable people in, but these larger countries, for the mere fact that you have a citizenship by investment program, now start looking at you sideways.
Yeah.
It then devaluates our passport.
Yeah, because here's the funny thing. As you say that, I was reading something and they were saying a lot of these people use these investment programs to get into countries that have lower visa requirements for other countries, because countries that they want to access.
So that
or
was,
none at all.
That's what all of them said. They were like visa-free access to 100 and something countries, right?
But, but here's the funny thing. So now you do that and you start doing your crime and you start hurting the country's name, and the next thing you know, now Canada looking at the country and saying, hey, you need a visa now to come here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's that's the thing. At the end of the day, it's the quote-unquote true citizens who end up
paying the price for that, right? Well, yeah.
In terms of having that kind of negative thing, negative stigma, having a harder time entering these countries.
Yeah, because think about
more...
it, not only that, the criminal have the money to pay for a passport or citizenship in another country. The true citizen may not have that kind of money to do that. So they can get that luxury of maybe popping into one of these countries.
Yeah, the average person not making anything near 100,000 US. This, you know.
Yeah. But you see...
Probably in a lifetime?
In a boy. You see, all these things, that's my problem with this program. And here's my thing. Instead of... You see how you said how they're saying invest in infrastructure and this, and it just felt like they were reading off the budget.
Mm.
How about you go through? You'll do some kind of analysis, right? That's just my take. I don't say it'll fix the whole thing, but you know, maybe a possible, you know, change to it. Each year you go, you identify three categories or three sectors in the country that you think need some kind of funding and help. So it could be education, infrastructure, health, right?
Yeah.
And then you tell the people you all want to invest for this year. These are the three things you can put your money into.
Right.
But here's the kicker. You give all of them a minimum you want for it. So let's say if you want to invest by education, you have to invest a minimum of 150 grand.
Mm.
You want to invest in health, you have to invest a minimum of... You give all of them the same minimum of 150 grand, but you tell them the more you invest, maybe the quicker you go through or something. You give some kind of incentive to make them invest more.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. At the end of the year, you go back and you revisit those three sectors and you see which one you hit the goal in.
Yeah.
So let's say you hit the goal in infrastructure. The next day, you take infrastructure off and you put something else on instead of infrastructure. And you go about it like that. But then my problem with that, and I say it and I'm hearing myself now, they will do that, but then we will not see if the money actually went to those things.
Well, and I think that's the primary problem here, right? I think we have these programs. The programs are fairly lenient in who they're accepting, but I think there's also a lot of privacy involved with the programs to protect the people buying the citizenship. So it's not like there's a list of, you know, who they are. That information is, you know...
Well, I don't want to know who invests. I just want to know how much was invested and where the money went.
Exactly.
That's what
I'm saying. That reporting is not to the average person is not necessarily being made available. I think we spoke about you know, how this thing devaluates the passports and affects the populations as a whole. But I think another thing we should dive into a little bit more is even the you know, like we said about all of these islands competing with each other. And when are we going to start working better together for our benefit versus, you know, trying and cut each other and compete with each other here and there? I understand. I know it's a competitive space and, you know, we all want our slice of the pie, but... You know, what did you say St. Lucia's own started at? What didn't you say?
It started at first, it was like 250 grand.
Grand. Then it dropped to 150 grand.
Now it's 100 grand.
And that's just to to compete or to you know, like to compete.
Well, now, we think it's to compete. It could be that it's just these people put that in place to, you
or,
know.
Or maybe it is now that they all get into a place where they're all equal to now all be roughly about $100,000. But still, I mean, if you... Why not band together to be higher and not lower?
As I say, I band together, I right? be higher. Well, what we do, we band together. First of all, we take off this like 3 to 6 months thing. Let's make this process at least 8 months long.
I don't know.
You know, because I don't believe you can do enough due diligence on somebody in 3 to 6 months to know if they are criminal or not.
Well, and I think you can, but the question is, what are their processes to do due diligence of people, right?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying there. I hear you, and I agree. It's a tricky space, in my opinion. It really is a tricky space. So yeah, Adani. Any thoughts, any comments? Danny die?
No, I'm here. I think that the states involved need to band together. So, like, CIP shouldn't be a per island thing, since when you get that passport, you can enter any of these islands anyway. I feel like CIP should be like a OECS or regional.
Okay,
regional thing.
Well, it would have to be OECS, because one thing you realize, Jamaica, Trinidad, none of these larger, Guyana, none of these larger countries are offering citizen, they're not selling their passports.
You see, I agree for Daniel on that whole, it should be OECS, it should be a group thing, but as we have seen, I don't think this is the first time I've said that for something, some topic on this podcast, that it shouldn't be a group thing, but the countries themselves haven't come together and get their head around like what we're doing together or agree on something. Because I feel like if they came together, Anushka, right? Adani, check me, we all come together. Let's say Adani, you in St. Lucia, Anushka in Dominica, I'm in Antigua. People trying to buy passports. We come together, we say, hey, may say, hey, that. I see they have a market, people trying to buy passports. First of all, may say, let me agree, we're going to put the price at this much. Because think about it, guys, when one person buy a passport from St. Lucia, they jump in around the whole Caribbean. You go in Barbados and do your visa, you leave in your visa, then you travel in with your ID.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fine. So we say, okay, guys, let's do it at this price. But then we start putting other little things in there. So we start saying about, all right, guys, let's make sure that the person, you know, spend a total of, let's say, 2 weeks here in our country and whatnot. But it's a group thing we're doing there, right? If we say we're doing it in the OEC, it's a group thing. So if we, instead of we doing it on an upper island basis, then we say, let's make it that they spend a total of 3 weeks in the OECS on a whole. So it could be any OECS island.
Mm.
You check what I'm saying? So now I'm saying, well, you buying your passport for St. Lucia, or you buying your passport for the OECS.
Well, so, you still have to, I think, I hear what you're saying, but I think just based on the nature of how the OECS is set up, you still have to set a primary country,
yeah, you
right?
Do. Yes,
it's like the EU, but even with the EU, you still have a primary country.
Yeah.
Still the primary country. Because just gain access to the others.
The thing is taxation. Yeah. Right, there's somewhere they have to pay taxes,
yeah. But look, you're telling me some of these investments,
but for exempt, other things,
duty exempt,
yeah. But that's just for that, right? That's just if they do that and don't do anything else. But if they actually decided to spend their 5 days and set up,
well, I mean, if they spend their 5 days,
but
then hopefully,
or
they,
if
that,
they had to
body,
go ahead.
I was saying, body process to just get in. Into the country, I think there should be a process to keep your passport as well.
Oh no, I agree.
So, and if you yeah. and if you don't meet those guidelines, then you lose your passport.
You get the passport, you should come to that country you have that passport for a certain amount of time every year.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
You,
so being like at least a month.
You believe there should be a residency requirement, and yes, for a lot of them there is yes, one or a very low one.
Yeah, you need to show your face there. There and if you're not showing your face, you need to show some kind of record that you are sending some kind of money into the economy, a certain amount.
Yeah.
So let's say we say, okay, you cannot come, we put a 10 grand US requirement. You have to show you sending 10 grand into the island's flow, economy, cash flow, in that year.
Yeah. Because I think exactly what you said, the contribution of this to the economy outside of just cutting a check is a major kind of gaping hole in this whole thing, right? From...
Yeah.
Especially when you think of the issues with job creation and youth unemployment, right? Youth unemployment in a lot of these countries is... So, for people under the age of 35, I think youth unemployment is, in some of these countries, 30-something, 40-something percent of people under 35 are unemployed. So, you know, there should be more parameters on job creation, and job creation maybe in specific industries, or a higher number than just three permanent jobs. Yeah,
but here's that. Here's thing. You said something there about just cutting a check, but the check is not even that large. I mean, I think Antigua may have the largest fees.
Mm-hmm.
Because when somebody come and they invest at 100 grand, or, well, if they invest 100 grand in the National Development Fund, then we know it's going to government-wide stuff. But if somebody come and buy real estate for 400 grand, pre-approved,
and sell it,
not the government land, unless it's some government-owned land.
Yeah.
If it's government-owned land, then yeah, the government gets it. But if it's people who own it, like citizens, then some citizens just getting 400 grand in their pocket, and all the government getting is 50K. That's all they're getting. They're just getting 50K for the processing fee.
But the thing is,
but that... the thing is not to, you know, support the government. The thing is to support the country as a whole.
I don't think so.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. You say it's not support the government. The government should be the country. The government should be representing the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing. The
government, but it's not only to support the government, it's support the country.
When I say support the government, I mean support the country. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you're thinking when we say support the government, it's going to the politician's pocket, because that's how it has been going regularly. But by right, when the government get money, the government should be using it for the country.
But so
put it towards education, infrastructure.
But even though it's not going into a politician's pocket, like, the government can still use that money to do things that are not beneficial to the country.
Well, then that's a different thing. Then that's an issue with the government not using the money directly.
So that's why I think there should be multiple. So even though the government does get a processing fee of some sort, I feel like the main fee should be the enterprise project. And to make matters even clearer, they should invest in a company that has a solution ownership of at least 51 to 60%.
The other thing is there's just we don't have enough clarity. We don't know in terms of the government determined land and the government determined businesses, if it is in terms of the government determined land, if it is crown lands or if it's a combination of...
I doubt it's crown lands.
But I feel like it's more likely for it to be crown lands, because they're not gonna just pick random people's land for sale, and they may not pick the random people.
Exactly, that's what I'm about
to
say.
Their own people.
You say they wouldn't pick random people, but it's not random people. It could be their own people.
Who
no, but it's yeah, it's pre-approved people.
It's pre-approved people.
When they come and say,
"I
have
land, I'm trying to get investors to do something on my land."
I still think it's probably a combination of a lot of crown lands and or government owned lands, and
I think it's wherever the government says it is.
Let me tell you.
Pre-approved can mean many things.
Uh-huh. But same thing for the businesses, right? Like, hopefully there are some startups or
Adani said the thing. They should invest in a business that's owned primarily by the citizens. And when I say citizens, I'm talking about somebody locals of the country. Yeah. Because
so you cannot put 1 million into sandals and then just walk away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But
you have to put 1 million into like a
Adani, you say 1 million
into like sandals. Seamus man. Seamless math.
You say 1 million in Sanders, but let me put it an easier way. Let's say me and you, we from Spain. Let's say this year you go, you become a citizen of St. Lucia and you open a business. If I want, next year, and you get your business on after privilege, next year I come in and I say, hey, after that, I invested in your business, eh? And all other money not going to St. Lucia because it's going straight to you. Because it's your business I'm investing in. You don't live in there. I invest in somebody else, some random person who come in and get their passport the same way I try and get mine. So you have to avoid...
There are many loopholes, eh? But you just shan't cover as many as you can.
That's the thing.
I think if somebody becomes a citizen within a year, like there should be some kind of period, like, you know, like if you get your green card, you cannot become a citizen for a few more years kind of deal. Like there should be some kind of, so that you just don't approve everybody.
So
or
that's my thing.
If you are approved, then you still need a Lucian, like a national Lucian, to help you further. So you cannot just do these things without being there for a few years.
So if you go and start a business, you have to bring a solution in, and the solution have to own a certain percentage of the business.
Yeah, regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would happen because if you brought a solution in, if I came in and I had to be part of a business that was primarily solution, then even though the solution sold to me, my friend coming would still have to be on a pre-approved by the government list. Exactly. So the government would have to approve me. And then maybe I'll be a risk because that money might not stay in St. Lucia. So they would say, no, he have to find his own Lucian enterprise to support. Because when you came in, you were not fully a Lucian enterprise. So, and now you own the business. So they would work some way around it. But as it is right now, there's no benefit to the country other than just a few dollars and cents here and there. But I think that it could be a lot bigger effect on the economy.
But Adani
positive.
Adani made a comment there. You said the whole thing about green card. Why didn't you do that instead? Instead of saying you become a citizen, I give you permanent residence. And then I give you residency. And then
maybe
you have to go a couple of years and then you can become a citizen.
Because they're really trying hard to sell it to the people as like a no worry kind of,
Because the main reason these people would do that is to get a passport.
It's to bring people, you know, and it's not to bring people to stay. It's just to get the money. It's a transaction.
Yeah, it's a transaction. But now we out here just giving passports. We out here like Oprah. You get a passport. You get a passport. You get a passport. That's what we're doing now.
I think we're too concerned about the volume and we need to be more concerned about the quality of people that we allow.
Yes.
So if you get 10 people, right, to buy your passport at $100,000, that's $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. If you get 3 people that come to St. Lucia, love the island and want to invest $1 million each,
that's $3 million.
That's a $3 million. That's a much better scenario. And they live in there. They live in there like a month out of the year, they have their business. They come in there. They spend the economy. They go in Grizzly. They just flying $100 bills behind vendors. You know, and you know they're just boosting the economy because people have more money to spend. And people that have more money to spend going out more, and they just making the economy cycle work.
I would be interested to know because, you know, when you head into Hironora, what the billboard says? Arrive a tourist or arrive as a visitor, leave as a citizen, right? As you're driving into the airport. But my question is, I would really love to know how much of the actual applications are from people who have actually, you know, visited the country and felt compelled to want,
exactly,
you know, citizenship.
But even more, Adani said, okay, I feel like they can strike a line between quality and quantity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have to cut down the quantity so drastically, but I think we can cut it down and get a good quality, a good batch of people coming in that will give good money. But also, My main issue, and what I said earlier in this thing, my main issue is that, is the fact that we don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where the money going. We don't know how much coming in. I feel like they need to be more open with this information. You don't have to tell me the name of the person.
Yeah.
But tell me how many people applied this year and how many people paid the fees and where that money went to.
Well, I think that data is, you know? The data is out there as to how many people applied and what they collected was. But the question of what they did with it is where the big question.
The data is out there, but how readily available is the data? That's my thing. Yeah. I'm saying these things need to be readily available. So if me as a St. Lucian, I sit down there a night in, I'm watching the news and I hear, or me as a Dominican, I sit down and I'm watching the news and I hear somebody on the news say about, we accepted, you know, the system, they're talking about the news, they're saying the investment program is booming and whatnot. I say, hey, investment program, what is that? And I take my computer, I should be able to go on some site for my island and click around and say, oh, we took in this amount of people, we got this amount of money, it went here, ah, this program is really doing good for us. But right now, all we're doing is we're hearing, we have a program, we're hearing people applying, money coming in, and then that's it.
Well, the transparency is very low.
Yeah, and we that need more most, transparency and more
that's
more
for most government programs.
We need more transparency and more accountability. We need to know, checks and balances, let's know what's happening and where it's going. And stop, and like I say, stop telling the people investing infrastructure, this and that. Stop reading the budget and tell them to put every item on the budget that they could possibly put money in.
Well, I don't think they don't decide where the money goes in. That's just the fund could fund any of those.
They need to decide. I feel like they need to decide. Like I said, they need to go sit down and look at the things that needed the most and decide.
Well, any other kind of takes on this whole.
I think over time it will either go horribly wrong or it will gradually improve into something that will actually work for us more than it already does.
Let me tell you that. You see the price already start dropping. Like, whoa, it's going to go horribly wrong. It's going to get to a point where we've damn near given out the citizenship for free. Because the money already, I don't think that is doing so much for us. When some of these islands in how many millions of dollars of debt and whatnot, really, what is $100,000 doing for them that much? Like, really and truly.
Yeah, very true.
It's like,
but I mean, over
like
time,
and patch a hole in a boat with a band-aid, a plaster. Really?
Yeah. And then you have these people roaming around with your passports who are not all bad, but...
Yeah, know. We're not saying everybody bad. By all means, not everybody is bad. But as...
There is potential to be bad.
You know, given what we know, and, you know, just me being in cybersecurity and what I know about how people less do their whole money laundering and all these kind of things... They're looking for islands, you know, they're looking for places like that where nobody really paying attention. People just willing to just, you know, hand out a passport to look the other way, take the money, like, oh my God, money, forget about it.
Mm. Well, there were already reports that St. Lucia and other islands were on a US money laundering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yep.
So we already have to watch out for that. You know, and the last thing we want to do is make it so that we are persona non grata in countries that we frequently visit.
Exactly.
Because, you know, once you lose those privileges, you don't get them back soon.
Mm-hmm. Imagine they put you as a solution on the new fly list.
Ooh.
Now you are like a terrorist.
Well,
you can't fly.
Imagine if...
You can't go to New York.
You can't go to New York Labor Day weekend to never put...
But imagine, you know, like
no Miami Vava.
Let's say you were already, because you know a lot of islands have Syrians and stuff, right?
Yeah,
who've been there forever and that kind of thing. Imagine like you from one, your background is from one of these countries, but because of all of these new people coming in, you start trying and go somewhere and they think you
just looking bad for you. So what's his last name? Pronounce that again. Ah, okay. No fly. Yeah, it's I feel like it's a good idea. It really is. But they need to cut back on the quantity and go for more quality.
Yeah.
They need
to invest. Like, people have to write an essay. Like, no, what are you contributing to St. Lucia other than your money? Like, and write a two-page essay. And those that do it, just let them in.
Well, Adani, you say write an essay, but listen to this. In the Caribbean, you know we have a thing called the CARICOM Implementation Agency for Crime and Security Impacts, right? You know we have that. And that's basically, along with the Joint Regional Communication Center, this is basically giving us tools to do background checks and security checks on people. So my thing is, why are we not using those things properly? I do not believe we can do those things in a span of 3 to 6 months and find out if somebody is a bad guy or a good guy.
As with anything that we do, we trust other outside agencies more than our own. So most of these CIP things are handled through outside agencies that are probably not even in the Caribbean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then that's another thing. We need to take up the whole checks, the stringent checks on our own. Utilize those systems. Find a way to get in, you know, to liaise with FBI and all these people to get them information, Interpol and whoever, when we need that kind of information. Because, like I say, 3 to 6 months is not enough time to tell if somebody is a good person or a bad person, if they might be lying or not.
It's not.
If that person or the person can say, hey, guys, in the criminal operation, walking, guys, I'm applying for citizenship to Antigua. Let's cool out on the money laundering for like 3 to 6 months. When I get it, we'll pick right back up. You know? So then, now they slip through. Now, if you had this FBI, all these kind of things, you can see a pattern and say, well, they were doing it. If they were doing it, they're probably still doing it. Then I don't want them in here.
Mm-hmm.
We need more stringent checks, man.
Yeah. Yep.
If we're not out here, if we're not just giving people driver's licenses, why are we just giving people
passports?
And it doesn't take 5 days to get your driver's license.
Okay. Yeah.
You have to go on the defensive drive.
All kind of things. You have to. Yeah. If you're not just handing out licenses and collecting money, then why are you just handing out passports and taking money? We need to do better.
Just claps for Bernanda wisdom, man.
I had to break it down. I had to break it down real simple there, because, you know, I sometimes I just read these stories. I read that one about that Indian billionaire that do his, you know, his crime, his bubble, his fraud, his $2 billion. And I said, what? Boy, that's Antigua that happened to. That could happen to Dominica next. Grenada could have one. Anybody could have somebody like that, doing that kind of thing.
All of them could have one.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to hear what your guys' thoughts on the whole,
you know, CIP, citizenship by investment program.
If you
for it, you against it.
You know, if you disagree with everything that we've said,
boy, find it hard to find somewhere.
Let us know. Yeah. You know, I mean, we like to kind of stay educated and kind of stay on top of these kinds of.
Yeah, if you know of anybody who may have done it, or you know of a business that may have gotten investment from it,
or you know somebody who works in the CIP office in
your country. Yeah, you know, like. Let us know. You know, we open to hear new information, you know. We don't know everything. We just share with you our opinion on what we know.
But I think it's also kind of taking back the education, you know, into our hands, and like, even if it's not readily available and stuff, by the government, kind of finding out and knowing for ourselves what the situation of these things are, because at the end of the day, even if it's indirectly, it's still
readily available, I'm not saying like it's not there. It's probably there. But what I'm saying is, let's make it a little easier for somebody inside they wanted to go and find it.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have to be, well, I don't know, maybe I think it's this, or talk to this lawyer because this lawyer does it and he can tell you everything, or go to that building and you go to that building, they give you a piece, and tell you, well, go that building over there, they give you another piece, and you know, like.
Yeah.
Budol FAQ on a website. Just build a CIP website for FAQ.
Well, I think there are some out there. So I think it's more than that. I think it's the reporting back to the citizens.
No infomercial. You know? The,
I'm done.
The public I'm service done announcement. With you. Yeah, a YouTube video.
Oh my
you
God.
Want to learn about CIP? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, more, you said an infomercial for CIP. For the cheap price. For installment. $9.99.
Boy, installment program for a password? That'll be serious.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so, you know, guys, it's been another exciting episode. It's been fun imparting what we've learned about this, you know, talking about it. Feel free, like we say, tweet at us, share your opinion. Let us know. If you know anything, if you might know more than us, so you might want to come and, you know, give us some more information, school us some more. We open to that, guys. Always.
And also, if you aren't following us on social media, do that. You know? Find us, be our friend.
You know,
we're
nice
people.
We always around. One of us is always on the Twitter account. For sure. So.
Alright.
Alright, guys. And
see you next week.